Hare Krishna, welcome to Bhakti Sangha conference call. We are extremely fortunate to have His Grace Sukumar God Prabhuji here with us today. And Prabhuji would be enlightening us by discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, and verse 27 till 29. But before we dive into this nectarine class, I would like to share a brief introduction about our today's speaker, His Grace Sukumar God Prabhuji. Sukumar God Prabhuji was born in Maharashtra, India in 1980, brought up in a social background where spirituality was often questioned. Later, he developed a natural taste for inquiry into the mysteries of God's creation. Passed the College of Engineering, Pune, Mechanical Engineering in 2003, he came in touch with the devotees of International Society for Krishna Consciousness in 2003. He found all his questions answered in the books of Srila Prabhupada. As a student of MBA Finance, he studied Srila Prabhupada's books and became a sincere practitioner. He joined the NCDEX, National Commodities and Derivatives Exchange, Mumbai, as an assistant manager and worked for 3 years. Later, he took on a two-year brahmachari training course in Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple, Mumbai, and was initiated into the Brahma Madhav Gudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj in 2010. He was in the youth preaching department and was in the seva of guiding the youth. He always wanted to share his joy of Krishna consciousness with the youth. So he gave up his job and decided to help the misguided youth by helping them understand the message of Bhagavad Gita. He joined ISKCON Chaupati as a resident in 2009. Later, he was posted to ISKCON Nasik Temple. He is serving as a youth counselor in various colleges of Nasik. He conducts seminars on personality development topics in educational and corporate sectors. So that was a brief introduction about today's speaker, His Grace Sukumar God Prabhuji. Hare Krishna Sukumar God Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much for giving us your valuable time and association this morning and enlightening us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. Without further ado, I would like to request you to please take over from here. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminathanam. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Chari. विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाध श्रीवासादि गौर हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम एम आई ऑडिबल माता जी माई वॉइस क्लियर
यस प्रभु जी
ओके थैंक यू हरे कृष्ण सो टुडे विल बी डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद भागवतम कैंटो 6 Chapter 14 and text 27, 28, and 29. So this is text number 27. Shri Shuka Vacha. Iti Arthita Sabhagavan. Kripalur Brahmana Sutaha. Shrapayitva Charum Vashtram. Vashtram Ayajat Vibhu. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, S. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In response to the request of Maharaj Chitraketu, Angira Rishi, who was born of Lord Brahma's mind, was very merciful towards him. Because the sage was a greatly powerful personality, he performed a sacrifice by offering oblations of sweet rice to Vashta. Text 28. Jeshta Shreshta Chaya Radnyo Mahishinam Cha Bharata Namna Krita Dyutis Tasye यज्ञ उच्चिष्टम आदद्विजः ओ परीक्षित महाराज बेस्ट ऑफ भारत द रेमिनेंट्स ऑफ द फूड ऑफर्ड इन द यज्ञ वर गिवन बाय ग्रेट सेज अंगिरा टू द फर्स्ट एंड मोस्ट परफेक्ट अमंग चित्रकेतुज मिलियंस ऑफ क्वींस हुज नेम वाज कृतद्युति टेक्स्ट 29 अतः नृपतिम राजन भावितैकस्तवात्मजः हर्ष शोक प्रदस्तुभ्यम इति ब्राह्मणो सुतयो translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. The word Harsha means jubilation and Shoka means lamentation. The king was overwhelmed with joy when he understood that he would have a son. Because of his great jubilation, he would not actually understand the statement of sage Angira. He accepted it to mean that there would be certainly jubilation because of the birth of his future son, but that he would be the king's only son and, being very proud of his great wealth and empire, would not be very obedient to his father. Thus, the king was satisfied, thinking, let there be a son. It doesn't matter if he is not very obedient. In Bengal, there is a proverb that instead of having no maternal uncle, it is better to have a maternal uncle who is blind. The king accepted this philosophy, thinking that a disobedient son would be better than no son at all. The great sage Chanakya Pandit says, Ko artha putre putrena jatena yona vidvan na dharmika kanena chakshusha kimva chakshu pidaiva kevalam. What is the use of son who is neither a learned scholar nor a devotee? Such a son is like a blind, diseased eye, which always causes suffering. Nevertheless, the material world is so polluted that one wants to have a son even though he is useless. This attitude was represented in the history of King Chitraketu. Hare Krishna. So we welcome all the devotees for this Srimad Bhagavatam class. So grateful to all of you for allowing me to make a presentation on this Srimad Bhagavatam, the Amal Puran. Today here we have Ekadashi also, so it's a great privilege and honor to be speaking something from Srimad Bhagavatam. So the 14th chapter, 27th shloka is Iti Arthita Sa Bhagwan Kripalur Brahmana Suta. So he's giving an introduction of the great sage Angira. Shrapaitva Charum Tvashtram Vashtram Avigyat Vibhu. So he's saying Iti is thus Arthita. In the last shloka, till the last shloka, 26th shloka, we saw that Chitraketu Maharaj is requesting him that he would like to have a son. And in accordance here, now Angira Rishi will be speaking. Sir. Sir is Angira Rishi. He. Now, four qualities of Angira Rishi are mentioned in this shloka, this is 27th shloka. First is Bhagwan, the most powerful. Second, Kripalu, being very merciful. Brahmana, Sutaha, he is the son of Lord Brahma, who is born from Lord Brahma's mind. And fourth is Vibhu, he is a great sage. Now this, what does this sage do when he hears the request of Chitraketu Maharaj? Rapaitva Charum. He told them to cook a very special sweet rice, which was meant for Tvashtram. Tvashtram is a demigod. He is not the same Tvashta, he is Tvashtra. He is a different, he is a demigod. And the other one, Tvashta, is a sage. Ajayat. And he worshipped that demigod, Tvashta, with the sweet rice offering. Now, this 14th chapter is very interesting, and so many things to learn from this chapter. The 14th chapter describes how Chitraketu Maharaj, by mercy of devotees, obtained a son whose birth caused him both happiness and distress, and whose death caused him a lot of distress. If we look back in the 6th shloka, Parikshit Maharaj asked this question in the 6th shloka, how did the most rare bhakti, which is beyond the three modes, exist in a demon like Vritrasura, who is bound by, who seems to be bound by the three gunas, whose behavior seems to be bound by the three gunas? Actually, he is not bound by Triguna, but it seems that he is functioning under the modes of materialism. 7th shloka, Shukdev Goswami, he'll be answering. He says, my dear Lord, Shukdev Goswami, no, Parikshit Maharaj is speaking. He's saying that although Vritrasura was a very sinful demon, and he showed the prowess of a most exalted Kshatriya. And by his prowess, he has satisfied Indra in his battle. Now, how is it that such a person who is of a demoniac body, demoniac, looks like he has a demoniac mindset, be a great devotee of Lord Krishna? So this contradictory behavior is causing great doubt in the mind of Parikshit Maharaj, and that is why he is very, very eager to know about the history of Vritrasura. Now, in the history of Chitraketu Maharaj, which is described in this chapter, and also we'll be looking at the part where now he's meeting with the great sage Angira, is now been disclosed in the 26th sloka. If we look deeply in till sloka number 26, we will be able to understand that any person reaching to the stage where Vritrasura is always in progression. If you see a devotee, if he has reached certain heights in his spiritual life or in his material aspects of life, it is always in stage of progression. It is never one stroke. Just like if we see the life of Parikshit Maharaj, in the life of Parikshit Maharaj, it seems very amazing that in the first onset, even when he is just in the womb of his mother, he is having darshan of the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna. There is no 16 round, there is no four regulative principle, there is no tapasya, nothing doing. He directly has the darshan of the Supreme Lord in the womb of his mother. So this is indicative that he has gone through all the necessary requirements which are very crucial to have the darshan of the Supreme Lord face to face. So it's not one day or one go that he is having direct darshan of the Supreme Lord in the womb of his mother. He has to go through a series of events which is followed by certain experiences, realization, and the growth happens. It's a very organic process. It's not a one-stroke process. Just like if you see the life of Vritrasura, Vritrasura becoming a great devotee is not one event. It is a series of events that he had to go through to reach that stage. And that is why this chapter is very, very important. And to what extent, on what stage he is on the stage where he has even sought the attention of Indra. Indra is shocked to see his devotion. Indra feels that I should be displaying this devotion to Lord Krishna, but here is a demon who is displaying such deep loving. So it takes immense practice and determination to be consistent to reach a certain stage of spiritual practice. Just like if we see the previous chapter is the first chapter of the sixth canto. This famous example which we often quote, the elephant taking bath for hours together, and then he comes out on the land, and as soon as he comes on the land, he throws mud. Now, did we ever ponder upon this very powerful, brilliant example which is given by Shukdev Goswami himself? Why does the elephant do so? Because maximum time he has been staying on land and is in contact with mud. Now, his mind is continuously accustomed to react to a certain environment in a particular way. He is in touch with the land, and that is why for him, staying in mud or staying on land is very natural. For example, now let's relate it to our life as sadhakas. When we visit temple, we chant, we dance, we honor prasad, we associate with devotees, we speak harikatha, we hear harikatha, purification takes place. It's just like exactly the elephant entering the bathing water. And for hours together, he's there and he's cleansing himself. Now the elephant comes out. Similarly, we come out of a pure environment. We return back to our working places where we spend maximum time and the mind is already accustomed to react in a certain way. And exactly the same thing happens as soon as we return to our working places, the mind reacts in its typical way. Why? Because it has spent maximum time in that place, and that is why the responses are now fixed. Just like there's a documentary that has been made on the life of Osama bin Laden, who was one of the very prominent terrorists worldwide. So there is an event which took place. There is a lady and her friend is somehow caught up in the Afghanistan, and she is an US army officer, and her friend is brutally killed by the Afghan soldiers. And that is where she decides that tooth for tooth and nail for nail, I'll respond in the same way. So the entire time that she's there in Afghanistan, she gets every bit of information about this terrorist. And she posts it to the US security agency. And somehow through the intelligence agency and the spywares and the cameras, they get to have the exact location of the place where this terrorist is staying. Now, when this terrorist is staying at a place, now they get each and every corner to be known by the 10, 15 soldiers, the American SEALs, or the best of the soldiers. And every day in, day out for months together, they are practicing. Now, they haven't been to that place. They haven't been to that place. But seeing the videos and the site in which they have to enter the place where this terrorist stays, they practice it in their mind day in, day out, day in, day out. And the day comes when the attack has to be taking place. And you won't believe, within 45 minutes, the entire operation is complete. The terrorist is dead. All his associates are dead. They get his body. They keep it in the helicopter and they're out of the place. 45 minutes, the entire task is completed in a foreign land. The point is, they got to train their minds to the particular place in a particular response. For us, sadhaka, it takes same tremendous practice for us to respond to different situation in different ways or particular situation in a particular way. And then we reach to that higher level. This is exactly shown by the example of Chitraketu Maharaj. And this you will be able to see in chapter number 17 when he will be cursed by Mother Parvati, and then we have to see his response. That response is not one-time response. It has taken him long time to take that practices. Similarly, the Vritrasura that we see in the past chapters is not one-time event. It has been series of practices that he had to do to reach that highest level. In the previous shloka, 26th shloka, we see the primary stages of Chitraketu Maharaj, where he is highly attached. It is seen by the words where he mentions in the previous shloka, he has mentioned his desire, his strong desire to have a son. Now, the purpose of having a son is the typical response of a materially attached person. Now, why does he desire a son? So that in his next life, he will be safe. He doesn't fall in the hellish conditions of life. But even if we see Chitraketu Maharaj as a materially attached king, the best part is the king is having concern regarding his next life, the progress in his next life. If you read the sixth canto, first chapter, in the series starting shloka, Prabhupada makes it a very brilliant point in the early purports of the sixth canto, first chapter. Prabhupada mentions this point. The main problem of people today is that they don't believe in the next life. And what is the consequence of not believing in the next life? They want to enjoy this life to the maximum limit by doing anything, even if it may be wrong. And that is where the deep attachment takes place and it becomes very difficult. Prabhupada writes this in his purport, and he says that this makes it very difficult for any preacher to convince the ordinary people about the next life, and saving them becomes even altogether more difficult. And that is why life always will throw disturbances on the path of spiritual journey, so that we tend to shift our focus and try and understand why different situations are happening at different times. Just like I heard one story. There are two young brothers, and the youngest one is physically challenged and he is sitting on a wheelchair. And his brother, who is a bit elder to him, is driving him on the wheelchair. All of a sudden, what happens is the wheelchair tilts and the younger brother falls off, and the wheelchair is on top of that younger brother. Now he's trying to get his brother out, but somehow he's stuck. His foot is stuck in that wheelchair, and it is very difficult for him because he is not that elder. Now he is seeking help, but nobody is there to stop. And all of a sudden, he realized that there is a car that is coming towards him. So he takes a stone and he sees the car, and as soon as the car goes nearby him, he throws the stone and the windshield gets struck. And as soon as the windshield is broken, the person who is driving the car, he He brings the car to a screeching halt. And by the time he has gone ahead, so he stops, goes ahead, he sees nobody is there. He comes back and he sees that there are these two kids, and he somewhere in his mind he feels that let me ask them if they have done this. But he feels that he sees that one kid is already below the car and he is somehow struggling to get him. But still he comes there and asks him, did you throw the stone? And the elder brother says, yes, I did throw the stone. He said, why did you throw the stone? I have just purchased this car, which is very new, and you have caused great damage to the car. Then the kid says that, see, I have been struggling to get my brother out of this critical position, but nobody is here to stop me. And it is only to attract your attention so that you could help my brother, I threw that stone. Similarly, in life, same thing happens. We are in our new car, in our new world, in new environment, everything is going good, everything is going smooth, but nobody is ready to pay attention to the realities of life. And that is where the nature, Prakriti, throws one sharp stone and breaks the windshield of the car. And that is where we start fumbling and trying to find solutions to the difficult situations in life. And that is what exactly happens in the case of Chitraketu. A stone was thrown to him, and now his attention will be drawn. So Chitraketu Maharaj, the best part is, even in that situation, is thinking of the next life. That's the best part for him. Now, the second part here is, Chitraketu Maharaj, due to his previous Sukruti, is able to have a proper coach in his life who will help him deal with the situation. And that coach has already arrived in his life, and Angira Rishi. So he has the intervention of a great soul in his life, and that is the second best part that we will be seeing in the life of Chitraketu Maharaj. The point to be noted here is intervention of a superior person and hearing his realization is the surest way to uplift the mind and move ahead in life. We need those people. They are super required in our lives. Just like I'll share one story which I was reading in Mahabharata. In Varnavat, if you see Mahabharata, Pandava, in the first time when the Lakshagraha is burned, the house of Lakh is burned, they the five brothers along with their mother, they are in the Varnavat forest, and from there they escape, and that is where the Hidimbasur pastime takes place. That time five people and one mother, six people together, and six together they handle the situation. They come back to Hastinapur. Hastinapur, the dice game will take place, and they are now again sent to Vanvas. But this time Mata Kunti is senior in her age. She is not able to travel with them. She'll stay back, and the other lady will be accompanying them, and that is Mother Draupadi. Five Pandavas and Draupadi after the difficult instance of disrobing takes place. Now they are in Vanvas, and in Vanvas there is no official duty because they are not there as kings. They are there as ordinary citizens. So so what happens is, what is there? No duty. So maximum time they are hearing from the great sages in the forest. Now one day, while they are sitting among the sages, they see some effulgent light that is coming from the sky. And as they see this effulgent light that is coming from the sky, everybody is amazed. All the sages and the Pandavas and Mata Draupadi get up in respect, seeing what is this great effulgence that is coming. And they see that there is some person who is landing close to them. And after they see him very closely, everybody in the sages assembly, they say that here is the greatest of the sages, Markandeya Rishi. And immediately everybody is bowing down and offering obeisances. But there is a peculiar thing that is happening here. When the Pandavas offer the respects and get up to see Markandeya Rishi, they see that Markandeya Rishi is smiling. Now they feel very bad seeing that Markandeya Rishi is smiling, looking at them. They feel very bad because they feel that we are in distress, and here is a great soul who in spite of knowing our difficult situation is smiling at us, thinking that in what poor condition these people are. Markandeya Rishi could easily read their mind, and Markandeya Rishi then he says, don't worry, I'm not smiling at your difficult situation. I'm smiling thinking of one point, that how history repeats itself. He continues, I saw Sri Ram in forest here for 14 years. He says, I am remembering Lord Ram. He was also banished. You are also banished. But then he gives them a ray of hope. and the same point which we will be discussing at the end of this, he is giving them hope that, see, you are more fortunate than Lord Ram, because Lord Ram only had one brother with him. You are total five brothers and you all are together. You have some connection with your family, some friends, some great sages accompanying you all the time in the forest. So you are nowhere closer to what distress Lord Ramchandra has gone through. Now, hearing this, the Pandavas feel very relieved that, oh, there are people who have had difficult situations which are more difficult than us. So we have to always remember this point. Whenever we are in difficult situation, we have to remember that there are people in the outside world who are suffering far, far worse than what we may be going through right now. Only when we find time to look into somebody else's life, we can understand that my life is far better. Krishna has kept me far happier than other people. I have far lesser distress in my life as compared to other people. But hearing this, even then, there were two people among the Pandavas who were not that happy. Because if somebody is having a terminal disease and if I am having headache, my headache seems far difficult than the person who is having terminal illness. Two people, Draupadi and Bhim, they were not happy. Why? Because Draupadi was constantly thinking, I was insulted, I am the queen, but still I was insulted. Bhim, on the other hand, he was feeling, I couldn't help Draupadi, I couldn't take revenge, both in constant distress. Now, Markandeya Rishi could easily understand that both of them are in great distress. So, Markandeya Rishi, what he does, he says, let's all sit together and hear about the Katha of Shri Ram. So, all the sages accompanied by the five Pandavas, Mata, Draupadi, sit together and hear the entire Ramayana Katha from the lotus mouth of Markandeya Rishi. And when they hear the Katha, when they hear Ram Katha, the Katha was able to help them rise above the pain. This is the power of Katha, that the problem will not go. It will help us rise above the problem, and once we rise above the problem, we can have a top view about how to deal with the problem, and handling the problem becomes far more easier. Spiritual life is not meant to remove problem. When there are difficult times in my life, I chant extra rounds. I read extra Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is not meant to make the pain vanish. It is not meant to vanish the problem. That is exclusively meant to help me rise above the problem and have a top view as to how, in the best possible way, I can deal with that situation. And this is what the Pandavas were able to do when they heard Shri Ram Katha. This is the power of hearing Shri Ram Katha or Shri Hari Katha in the association of great sages or great realized people. That is why hearing Bhagavatam every day from different devotees is very important for me. Why? Because every devotee has a different approach to handle that problem, that situation. Now, coming to the today's shloka, 27th shloka. Okay, two things are mentioned in today's shloka. First, the four qualities of Angira Rishi, and second, how Angira Rishi worshipped the demigod Kvashta. Now, let's dwell in the four qualities of Angira Rishi. First is, the word that is used for Angira Rishi is Bhagwan. He is the most powerful. Kripalu, he is the most merciful. Brahmana Suta, he is the son of Lord Brahma. And fourth is Vibhu, he is the great sage. Bhagwan. Why is he termed Bhagwan? Because he is most powerful. It shows that his power to do something impossible, and that is why here is termed as most powerful Bhagwan. Like, as per the previous karma of Chitraketu Maharaj, he was not supposed to have a son. But by his personal power, Angira Rishi got him a son and was able to offer solace to the burning heart of Chitraketu Maharaj. He was burning in intense lamentation, and that is why here he is called as Bhagwan. He has the power to do something which no ordinary person can do, that is interfering in the karma of any living entity and giving him what is not destined, what he is not destined. Second, now he didn't only show his power. Here the second word he uses, Kripalu, is very merciful. How he is very merciful? Because he came there to bring out Chitraketu Maharaj completely out of his lamentation. And when he'll be coming out of that lamentation, then his mind will get ready to hear the reality of life, the absolute truth. So his mercy externally seeming may be to give him a son, but that is not the real mercy. That is external mercy. Internal kripa is always internal. What internal? He'll bring him entirely out of the illusion. Gopika, when they were in the rasa arena, Krishna gave them too many gifts from external. He kissed him, he played with them, water sports, dancing, singing, everything. The word used is antarhita. Bahirhita he did lot. But when he saw that it's time to do antarhita to the gopis, what was the antarhita? He could see that the gopikas have pride in their heart and have to remove this pride. And removing that pride was the antarhita that Lord Krishna bestowed upon the gopikas by disappearing from the arena. So this is the antarhita. That rising of emotions for Krishna is the antarhita. And that same thing will happen at the end of the next chapter. That is where his kripa comes. So kripa doesn't necessarily mean that something external good has to happen. Kripa means something good internally has to happen so that I become more steady and stable in my spiritual practice. Third, Brahmana Suta, he is the son of Lord Brahma. Now, what is the speciality of Lord Brahma? His body is made up of intelligence, you all know this. Means he has the best of the intelligence. So, he as the son, the Manasik Putra, the son who is born from mind of Lord Brahma, he knows each and everything as it is supposed to be. So he knows all the Vedic sacrifices and for whose pleasure they are done. Who is the actual Yajnapati? Who is the master of all the sacrifices? He knew that. And we'll see in the upcoming part how he is the excellent son of Lord Brahma. Just like in the start of Keno Upanishad, there is this. Now, why this Keno Upanishad is known as Keno Upanishad? There was a time when the demigods had a huge fight with the demons and they defeated the demons very easily. After defeating the demons, they became very proud. See, we did it. And when they were rejoicing, I did it. Somebody saying, I did it. There was a Akashvani. There was a sound in the ether which said that check if you can do something with this blade of grass. And there was a blade of grass that came flying in there. So all the great demigods, Agni, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Surya, Vayu, they thought, what a petty task. This blade of grass, we can burn it. Agni thought I can burn it, but nothing happened. Surya, I can scorch it with my great rays. Nothing happened. Vayu, I'll dry it. Nothing happened. Varuna tried to immerse it in water. Nothing happened. Indra with his thunderbolt. Nothing happened. Everybody tried. They couldn't do anything with that blade of grass. Again, the Akashvani came and was asking, who is the great amongst you? And that is where the demigods loudly shouted, Kena, Kena, Kena. Kena means who? Who is that person who is the topmost amongst all the demigods? And exactly when they spoke the word Kena, Kena, who is the topmost? Who is the topmost? Immediately at that time, Lord Vishnu appeared there to remove all their doubts that who amongst them was supreme, nobody else. Only Lord Vishnu is the supreme amongst all the demigods. So that intelligence is required to understand who is the supreme. And the fourth word, that is Vibhu. Due to his great devotion to Lord Krishna, he is called as Vibhu, a great sage. And that will be imparted later on from Narad Muni to Chitraketu Maharaj. And that is where association with devotee bestows bhakti. This is the example, Chitraketu Maharaj. And the devotee who bestows bhakti upon you, the mood in which he will be, if he is in Dasyaras, he will impart to you bhakti which is in Dasya Bhav. If he is in Sakya, he will impart to you bhakti that is in Sakya Bhav. If he is in Madhuri, he will impart Madhuri. So depending upon who you associate with, that kind of bhakti will be imparted. Okay, so due to his great devotion to Lord Krishna, is called as Vibhu. Now, in spite of his being Vibhu, great sage, and in spite of his being Brahmana Suta, the great son of the great intelligent Lord Brahma, we see that he is not worshipping Lord Vishnu. Now, Vibhu means his great devotee. He should have worshipped Lord Vishnu because he is great devotee of Lord Vishnu. He is not worshipping. He is worshipping some ordinary demigod for a son, demigod Tvashta, because he is having great clarity that for such a petty thing, you need not call Lord Vishnu all the time. Okay. So as devotees, we have to be very clear that every headache, you don't need to shout out the names of Lord Krishna. This is the habit that we have to undergo. We have to train our minds. Of course, it's not that we cannot call Lord Krishna, but it's a very petty thing. We don't call the Prime Minister of the country to handle your financial crisis. It's a very petty thing for him. So, this was the first point. Second point, the plan of Angira Rishi will be disclosed in Shloka number 28. Now, what is the plan that he has? Charum. Charum is specific oblation. Now, what is this charum specific oblation? Now, he was very clear about what he was supposed to do. It shows the readiness of the Rishi in terms of handling the case. So, every case in Bhagavatam is handled very differently according to the person. Okay, so he had the readiness in his mind. He had specific oblation. The word, see, charu, Prabhupada translates it as specific oblation. Specific oblation means, specific oblation means the purpose of worship was very clear. He had no ambiguity in his mind that whom I am worshipping and for what purpose I am worshipping and how I will be dealing with this case. Now, the worship of demigod means the result will be surely temporary. Krishna has made it already clear in Bhagavad Gita. Worshipping demigods means the result will be temporary. So, whatever is temporary has these qualities. What are the qualities? Shloka number 29. Okay, the last shloka for the day. Means today's session. He is saying, Atha Aha. The Rishi, after offering that oblations, the sweet rice came. The Mahaprasad remnants. Thereafter, the Rishi said, Dripatim Rajan, King Chitraketu Maharaj is addressing me. What did he address after he got the Mahaprasad sweet rice? Bhavita. The first word that he is using for Chitraketu Maharaj is Bhavita. Bhavita means in Bhavishya, in the later times, in the times to come, there will be. The first thing that he does to Chitraketu Maharaj is induce hope. Because he has become such a hopeless case, he is absolute dire need of hope. So the first thing when any devotee is in difficult situation is, what he needs is not philosophy, he doesn't need anything else, he needs hope. Every one of us, day in, day out, we need is hope that yes, someday my life will be successful. Someday I'll be able to see Krishna face to face. The first word that he's using is Bhavita. There will be what? Ek Atmaja. You will have one son. And if he's saying Ek Atmaja, then what is the need of that word Tava? He will be yours. That Tava, my son, yes, now I will have a son who will be mine. He is catching every emotion of Chitraketu. He is saying, you will have a son, your son. That identity, I will have a son. Oh, now what will be the effect? That we'll be seeing later. Then he says, Pradaha, who will Tubhyam? Unto you, he will be giving you. What will he be doing to you? Harsha Shoka. He will be giving you jubilation. He will be giving you lamentation. Iti Brahma Sutah Yayo. Saying this, the Brahma Sutta, the great son of Lord Brahma, Yayo, left. He spoke, but he didn't wait for the response. He didn't wait there to see the jubilation of Chitraketu Maharaj. Why? What was there on his mind? Okay, so the first point we discussed was, he instilled hope in the mind of Chitraketu Maharaj. Ek Atma Jatava, you will surely have one son. That surety gave him so much of joy that he was now able to transcend the phase of lamentation. And once you are in a basic mood to understand, then things will happen gradually. Without hope, life becomes painful. No hope in life means there will be no desire to live. The desire to live will be lost. Just like fourth canto, we see Mata Sati, when she saw that Lord Shiva has withdrawn himself from their relationship, she kept the hope going, but ultimately she found that he had absolutely no interest in the relationship. Why? Because we know that story from Ramayana. She took the form of Mother Sita. And after seeing her in the form of Mother Sita, who is a worshipable goddess, he said that I cannot take her for as wife. Now, I cannot look to her as wife. Now, she is more to me like a mother. And that is why he withdrew himself. And Mother Sati, when she understood that there is no hope for me to rejuvenate the relationship, that is where she takes the drastic stance. And then Dakshayagya becomes a point where she thinks that nothing doing, there is no hope left for me. Let me make a new start in the same relationship. And that is that she gives up her life and she comes back as Mother Parvati, the daughter of Himan. And again, she performs tapasya to get back Lord Shiva. So she did this to clear the mistake that she had done. Because that mistake which was committed by her unknowingly, but the consequences were very severe. She tried to bring back the relationship, but it didn't work because there was no hope she could see that Lord Shiva is in mind where he could restart the entire relationship. We see Brajvasis, they were hopeful till the time when Lord Krishna was in Mathura because they thought Mathura is close, he may someday come. But when he shifted to Dwarka, all their hopes were lost. And that is why Krishna had to send whom he sent. He sent Uddhava, he sent Balramji, he sent Subhadra Maharaj. So many people were sent. Why? Just to keep that hope going on. And the Vrajvasis did continue. Why? Because they were thinking that if Lord Krishna comes back and doesn't find us alive, it will be very painful for him. They never at any point could think of Krishna in pain. No. For them, seeing Krishna in pain was far worse than dying a million times. And that is, in the 10th canto, we see this. Srimati Radharani giving the example of the bird and cage. She's saying that there is a bird in the cage, but that cage is now surrounded by fire. The bird wants to leave the cage, but the cage is bolted from outside. So the bird has to continuously suffer the pain. So what is she saying indirectly? I am that bird. I am caught up in this body called cage. And the fire that is surrounding the cage is the fire of separation. She wants to give up the body. She wants to leave the cage. But the cage is locked from outside. And what is the lock? The last words of Krishna, that I'll come back. And that was their hope, that he may someday return. Angira Rishi gave hope so that he can continue as a king and have these desire to have a son and then come to the next stage of evolution, of spiritual evolution. But now what did he say? You will have a son, but it will be followed by what? Harsh and shock. Similarly, every material desire when fulfilled has to follow with these two things, harsh and shock, happiness and lamentation. This is the quality of material desire. This is the quality of temporary things. When you get them, there is happiness for some time. Ultimately, you get attached to them. And when it's time to leave those things, there is intense pain. This is the powerful message Srimad Bhagavat keeps giving time and again. So jubilation, that is harsha. And lamentation, that is shok. Now, in Prabhupada, now let's come to the end part of this. Prabhupada's purport we'll be discussing in short. Okay, Prabhupada's purport is always very brilliant. Only 4 points, Prabhupada has summarized everything. First thing, jubilation can be cause or can be reason for lamentation. Excessive jubilation can be cause of lamentation. Just like Chitrakethu Maharaj. When does this happen? When there is no homework of proper thinking. When the homework of proper thinking is not done, that same jubilation will turn into shoka. We see Chitrakethu Maharaj. And shoka or lamentation can be reason for jubilation when the proper homework of thinking is done. Example, Pingla from 11th Canto. She was totally dejected. She said, nothing doing, what hell this life is going. But in that dejection, in that shoka, she contemplated on the reality of life, and that shoka became the cause of her jubilation, and she became totally detached. Both way it is. Jubilation can be reason for shoka. Shoka can be reason for jubilation. Thinking. Every situation should keep us thinking. What is happening? Why it is happening? Where am I going? Why does this happen? Because it is the nature of material happiness and distress, lamentation. Wherever there is extreme joy and where there is extreme sorrow, it covers the power of discrimination. Chitraketu Maharaj was so happy, so overjoyed that he was not able to understand the exact meaning of harsha and shoka. Prabhupada, in four brilliant points, he is winding up the entire thing that this harsha and shoka has to tell. Point one. When someone helps us meet our needs, we tend to become dependent on that person or that thing. Just like here, Chitraketu Maharaj needed a son badly so that his forefathers would be delivered, he could be delivered. And that need was met by his son named Harsha Shoka. And he became dependent on his son, and that later became the cause of his Harsha and Shoka. So when someone helps us meet our need, we tend to become dependent on that person. This is the first point Prabhupada is conveying. Point number two. When our need is met by some person, something, some place, some circumstances, some situation, we tend to overlook at the faults in that. Why? Because since it has met my need, I have developed some soft corner for that person or thing or place or circumstances. Like Chitraketu Maharaj is thinking, even if the child gives me pain, it is still okay. What is that pain? He will be disobedient to me. Still, it is okay. I don't have problem. Because I have developed soft corner for the son who is not yet come. He will be coming. But already because he will be fulfilling my needs, I am already attached to that person. And just because I am attached, I will tend to look at the drawbacks. What will happen? He will disobey me. He will not follow my order. But it is better than not having a son. Point number three. The mind tends to neglect the pain that follows. Initially it says, once I have it, then there is no problem. The problem, I'll deal with that problem. Mind, what mind will say? Let me have that thing. Once I have, then I'll handle that thing. Whatever problem, I'll understand how to deal with that. But the point is, once we get attached to it, the attachment makes us more and more helpless. We can't do without that thing. And later, that same person becomes dysfunctional on multiple levels. That is where Prabhupada gives this example of blind and painful eye. It is blind, on top it is painful. What is the point Prabhupada is conveying? Just because there is an eye, it will make a person happy. Okay, but what cost are you paying? Just because it looks normal like the outside world that I have an eye, I also have eyes like other people. I want to show the world that I have an eye and I look normal like you. Just the same case with Chitraketu Maharaj. He just wants to feel natural and normal. I also have a son who can do my pinda, who can do my shraddha, who can deliver my forefathers. Okay, but what cost? What cost are we paying? We are not aware of the pain that we have to go through to handle that one thing, that one attachment. Just because I want to look normal. I was in a village for a preaching program, and in between, I saw one couple who left. Then after the program, we were having prasadam, and then that lady came. Program was nice. I said, thank you, everything is that. And I said, I saw your husband rushing. Was there some emergency? He said, yes, my father-in-law, he had some emergency and that is why he had to rush. Oh, I said, okay, how is he doing now? She said, he's stable, but, and you know, all the stuck up emotions, she started speaking about that senior person in her house, her father-in-law. She said, he's such a trouble, you see, he's such a trouble. I said, what happened? He said, he is so demanding in this age, he's so demanding. I said, what happened? He said, he had some muscular thing that came out and we did all the testing and the doctor said, there's nothing to worry. It's just some flesh that has come out. It's just a tissue growth, so it won't harm him, so you can keep at it. But this person, now he's so old, but just because he wants to look normal before the world, he said, remove this thing. And we had to pay thousands of rupees to get that thing cut and get a plastic surgery done. Why? Even in that ripe old age, we want to look normal. Of course, it's not wrong, but we have to go through the pain. And the fourth thing that Prabhupada mentions here, mind, when it is attached to a certain way of thinking, it won't let us think in a different way. It doesn't focus on the solution part. Chitraketu Maharaj was so overjoyed that he'll be having a son that he was not able to understand the real meaning of what the Rishi spoke to him. Rishi said something different, he took it something different. Why? Because the mind is already attached. Now it will constantly keep on thinking, oh, this is okay, this will be this, and I'll do it. Just like Arjuna, chapter number 2, chapter number 3, chapter number 4, chapter number 5, chapter number 6, asking the same question. Why? He's so attached. He cannot understand what Krishna is saying because he is attached to his own opinion. Oh, this will be this and this will be that. And it is wrong. I don't want to fight. Same thing. Chitraketu Maharaj. Attached to a certain way of thinking that it didn't allow him to look at the entire event in a deeper way. Now the last point. Why did the sage not wait there? Vibhu, he was all understanding. He knew what was the sequence of events that would follow. And had the king, had Chitraketu Maharaj known it, he would have told him, why didn't you stop me there? I would not have asked you for such a benediction. You could have corrected me. But sir, it is not about correction. It is more about, is your mind ready to accept the correction? The mind is so deeply attached that for somebody to correct becomes very difficult. Accepting that good instructions become very difficult because I am so attached to my own opinion. And the great example is Dhruva. Dhruva was so attached to taking revenge that he never considered that his stepmother would have to die. He never considered that. Why? Because that way, this has to be this way. My opinion is this and it will be this. Dhruva was not ready to understand the instructions of Narad Muni properly. And later he had to go through the pain of seeing his brother die, his stepmother die. And he had to get so angry that he had to kill thousands of Daksha. That his grandfather had to come. Kuber had to come to stop him. Why? I am attached to my own opinion. So, from time to time, we have to have that self-assessment. Following self-imposed rules is must so that we can refrain from all that is not useful for our spiritual life and progress. Just like in the life of Sri Abhiram Thakur, the great devotee of Lord Nityananda. He had his deities and he had one disciple whom he told that you take care of his deities. So he started taking care, worshipping deities, taking care of them nicely. And when he used to worship, there was one, Mataji used to come and visit the temple. And many times she used to come, and when he saw her, he started feeling attraction to that Mataji. So in his mind, he started feeling that I'm serving the Lord, but I have no attraction for the Lord. But my mind have attraction for other forms other than the Supreme Lord. And he was so disgusted that one day he pricked his eyes. He said, nothing doing, these eyes are useless, which are not attracted to the beauty of the Lord. So his Guru Maharaj Abhiram Thakur came and he came to know that this disciple has done so and so. And he became happy. He blessed him. that don't worry, henceforth you'll not be able to see any material beauty. With your internal eyes, you'll always be able to see the beautiful form of Radha and Krishna. So for a sadhaka to keep trying sincerely is the best policy. Keep trying, but with sincerity, no faking. Just like Jayananda Prabhu, when Srila Prabhupada gave him Gayatri Mantra, he tried so hard to chant it properly, but he was so busy in services, he couldn't remember the Gayatri. And then some devotees told Prabhupada, for such long time, he is not able to chant Gayatri properly. Prabhupada started laughing. Prabhupada said, he's a hopeless case. And that Prabhupada ended by saying, but your nature is so sweet, Jayananda Prabhu, that whatever mantra you chant, Lord Krishna will accept that as Gayatri. So it is all about developing that proper vritti, because it's the vritti, it's the nature that forces a person to perform proper or improper actions. Just like we see Chitraketu Maharaj. Do you think Angira Rishi would be the first Rishi to come to him and he would ask him for a son? So many would have come and gone. Every time we would have asked, what? Son, give me son, give me son. It became his nature. And he asked the same thing to Angira Rishi, who was such a great sage, who is described in Bhagavad with four qualities. He could have easily asked him, get me out of this material maya. He said, no. Same thing happened with whom? We see in the third canto also, Kapil Muni's mother, Devuti, she's saying the same thing. I had, who was my husband? Karda Muni, who saw Supreme Lord Narayan face to face. I should have asked him liberation. I should have asked him, get me out of this material and entanglement. He said, no, because it became her vritti. It became her nature. So, through these three shlokas, we should learn that we should be constantly checking as to what we are making our first nature. Are we getting attached to material things, or are we getting attached to spiritual upliftment? Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Dhritarashtra Bhagavatam. Jai Shri Prabhupada. Anant Koti Vaishnava.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for this beautiful class, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, do you have time today for questions? I see there are
yes, four. Yes, Mataji. We have 5-10 minutes.
Okay. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna and Radha Mataji, please go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dhanavad Pranam. Prabhuji, there are so many things that came to my mind. First, you said, well, I've heard this before, that Brahma is made of intelligence. If Brahma is made of intelligence, what are we made of, Prabhu?
We are made up of the earth, water, air, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. We are made of eight anyway.
Okay. So if he is made of intelligence and he knows everything, he composed Brahma Samhita, how do we understand his the Brahma Vimohan Leela, Prabhu? He's supposed to be so intelligent.
See, Brahma Vimohan Leela, there are some specific events in Srimad Bhagavatam which are exclusively focusing on the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. So, just like in the last part, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that Lord Shiva is also fighting, he has to deal with Vrikasur. Now, you may think that he is Devadidev, Mahadev, then how come he has to deal with Vrikasur? So, this kind of events are exclusively meant to show that they are not the Supreme and Lord Vishnu is the Supreme.
Thank you, Prabhu. My next question was, did I get you correct when you said for everything we don't have to ask Krishna? Did you say that, Prabhu? So these things keep coming. I mean, we understand that all of us trying to be pure devotees, we are not supposed to ask Krishna for everything. But I also often think that, you know, if we don't ask Krishna, our mind will anyway seek the help. And it tend to go either to astrology or this or that and other people or somebody. So isn't it better? And that way we will also get a chance to connect to Krishna, even if it's through our need. What do you think about that?
Okay. So if I would reframe your question, what is the underlying thought process when you ask something from Krishna? If I would ask you, what is the underlying
thought process? Yes, Prabhu, I would say, like, if I have a struggle in my material life, any sort of it, so it disturbs my spiritual life. So it should, so that my spiritual life does not get obstructed. So I want my material life to be smooth.
Yeah. Do you have, are you married, Mataji?
Yes, I have a kid also.
Do you have a son or a daughter?
I have a son.
Yeah. Okay. So how long does it take for you to understand that your son is in pain?
My son is?
In pain. Or he needs something.
Not much. Now he is not much. Yes, not at all.
Okay. So do you think that Krishna has to be told that I am in pain?
Not at all. Not at all. This I understand.
Okay. So when we go and tell Krishna that I want this, I want that, that means we feel that Krishna doesn't know what I want. Just like I was reading the commentary on 10th Canto, chapter number 1. Where the acharyas very beautifully they write this point that there is one word I forgot it where it is Shukdev Goswami is saying that Mother Earth is in pain, and when the demigods went to tell Lord Narayan that Mother Earth is in pain, he tells the demigod, I already know that she is in pain, and I've already made the provisions for her to deal with the situation. So similarly, we as sadhakas should also, as per the time, we should also grow in this thought process that Lord Krishna knows every small thing that is going on in my mind, that is going in my life, and He already has planned everything for me.
Absolutely, I understand that point. I was just thinking, if somebody were to take shelter in such situation, like, you know, Prabhu,
yeah, we should, not like it. But at the end, we should know that He does know and He already has planned.
And the last question I had, Prabhu, is like Dhruva Maharaj, you said, because he had a revengeful mind, that's why he had to suffer his own desire of, you know, seeing somehow his brother and mother, stepmother suffering, right? Did I get it correct, Prabhu?
Yeah.
So this is for a sadhaka point of view. We also get angry or upset or something. And these are so natural. What could have Dhruva done that, you know, you almost said the other side of Dhruva's story.
Yeah, that is true. The other side of Dhruva, just like Dhruva, if you read Gita 3rd chapter, there is one beautiful point that is made that all the desires that we have a momentum. Okay, they have a great speed. And Narad Muni did try to stop the speed of the desire of Dhruva by telling him to go back home. But at the end, he realized when Dhruva says, if you can help me, please help me. Otherwise, you move away from my way so that I can fulfill my desire. So, Narad Muni did try to deviate him from taking the further step. But he found that the momentum was so high that it would be very difficult for him to stop. And that is why he gave him a way which could purify his desire. But at the end, also, he had to understand the repercussions of having a wrong view.
So, as a sadhaka, what we understand from this story, he would have been better off. He would have understood what Narad Muni is trying to do and went back home instead of doing all the tapasya that we so, you know, glorify so much. And that's
okay. That is why the sadhu sangha is very, very important, because it helps us understand what has to be done and what not.
And especially their instruction as well, right? So one is sangha and one is taking the instruction. So, thank you so much, Prabhu. Can't thank you enough, and thank you. Please keep giving your association, Prabhu. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Preeti Vilasini Mataji, please go ahead with your question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, class. Prabhu, my question was, how are you treating the two twats? I thought they are the same in the sense that the sacrifice was meant for Tvashta. I thought that was the meaning of Tvashta.
Can you please repeat? I have a poor network connection here. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay. I'll try to be a little loud. I think it's an audio issue. Can you hear me, Prabhu?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prabhu, for the very interesting class. My question was about Tvashta. When you were differentiating the two Tvashtas, I didn't quite follow that, because the translation apparently meant the sacrifice for Tvashta. So it appeared to be the same Tvashta to me. So that was the question, Prabhu. Wasn't it the same?
Yeah. So if you... just a minute. Okay. So here, oblations. Okay, so here, if you read the thing, it will be clarified that that Tvashta was the Brahmana. And here the Tvashta that has been spoken is the demigod Tvashta. So both of them are different. Because here sacrifice by offering oblations of sweet rice to Tvashta. So you don't offer sacrifice to a Brahmana. Okay. So this is indicative of the point that he is a demigod named Tvashta.
So the Brahmana you are mentioning, is it Vishwaroop's father?
Yes. Yes. The other one, Brahmana, is Vishwaroop's father. But here he is a demigod.
My question was, wasn't he also one of the sons of Aditi? Because that's how the chapter unfolds. When we talk about the sons of Aditi and their sons, we say Tvashta had a son by the name Vishwaroop. And then later again, Vishwaroop was he was nominated as the priest of the demon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then his brother was Arvrutrasura. So then Tvashta again gets angry and he performs a sacrifice. So it connects back to him as being the demigod Tvashta, isn't it?
Okay. Now let's reconcile. If I offer something to a demigod, okay, would he fire back? Because the other Tvashta which we are speaking will fire back because his son would be killed. So that is how you have to reconcile that he is a different person. Otherwise, any of the acharyas would have taken this task to make it clear that he is the same person. But none of the acharyas in the commentaries, they have said that he is that other Brahmana Tvashta. So offering of oblations exclusively goes to a demigod who is in charge, who could deliver a son to Chitraketu Maharaj.
Okay, Prabhu. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna, Rinki Mataji. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. I don't know. I mean, I didn't know.
Yes, Mataji, just a moment. If you read the 27th shloka, here Prabhupada translates the same thing. Right. Sorry. Tvashtram, meant for the demigod known as Tvashta.
Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, so that is how it goes. This is in word to word translation. Tvashtra is meant for the demigod known as Tvashta. Yes, Hare somebody Krishna. Has something.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Prabhu, I got a question. It's like, how I don't know how to put the question, but I got the understanding that how will we come to know that we are not contact with matter, because we are not contact with the matter, because while we are in path of bhakti, because of the matter we're struggling a lot, like we cannot rise up in the morning, subha uth nahi pate, alsi hote hai. So, uh-huh. Samajh mein nahi aate, intelligent bhi ho sakta. So, is because of the matter, isn't it, Prabhu? Body of
because
the
of matter, matlab kaise?
Because of the matter, like we are body,
Prabhuji,
spirit and matter.
Haan, okay. Ji. To prashna kya hai?
So the prashna, it is like how will you come to know that we are not contact with our. Because of we can't come to the contact with the matter while we are performing the bhakti.
Okay, right. I got it. Okay, so you are saying just because we are in touch with matter, it becomes difficult for us to rise to the next platform? Is that the thing you are saying?
I mean, so because we are conditioned souls, so how we can deal with that?
See, just like if an iron gets rusted, isn't there a methodology by which the rust can be removed? There is a methodology. Similarly, there is always a method by which we can rise above the three modes. So even if we are in touch with matter, but there is always a provision that is given by Krishna so that we can rise above matter. And a time comes when the practices of bhakti, of vyabhichari bhakti, they become so mature, the example Prabhupada gives, just like there is a coconut, when it is wet, filled with water, when we shake it, we hear the water. But when the entire thing gets dried, then the coconut leaves the shell and you can hear the coconut. So similarly, we can rise above by strong spiritual practices which come through strong association of devotee.
Hare Krishna. Can I ask a question?
Yes, Mother.
Prabhuji, you said the four qualities of Angiramani. So I miss one, like, you know, Bhagavan and Brahmana Sutta and Vibhu. It gives the impression like it has the qualities like Krishna. And he is completely detached from this material world.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the fourth quality you were talking about?
Vibhu, great sage.
Yeah, I got that.
But his due to his devotion to Lord Krishna, he became Vibhu, powerful, great.
Yeah, so what are the other three qualities?
Acha, the three other qualities, he is Kripalu, very merciful. First is Bhagwan, most powerful. Then Kripalu, and third is Brahmana Suta. He is the son of Lord Brahma. He is born from mind of Lord Brahma.
So because he was Kripalu, that's why he gave the son to king? Like,
no, because he was Bhagwan, powerful. He could give a son which was not in destiny of Chitraketu Maharaj. Mm-hmm. Kripalu means because of his proper guidance, Chitraketu Maharaj was able to rise above that deep lamentation. That is the Kripa of Sadhu. He could make him detached by allowing him to go through the entire event.
Yes, Prabhuji, because of your class means I actually understood that my situation is just like a King Chitraketu. We don't understand. We don't understand the material thing. We keep asking. And when we get, and that becomes the cause of limitation. Yeah.
तुमची नम्रता आहे माताजी तुम्ही असं सांग.
No, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Mataji. So I think nobody has questions. So will you stop?
Prabhuji, there is one more raised hand if you have time. Hare Krishna, are you there?
Yes. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dhanvat Pranam, beautiful class. You said that for the duration we are, you know, in the Bhagavatam class or, you know, with devotees, we have this best behavior. And then as soon as we touch the material world, going to work and whatnot, we kind of forget everything. So how to overcome this?
Yeah, very important question. It's all about spending time, Mataji. See, if elephant for a maximum time, he stays on land. And for an hour or two, he stays in water. Now look at the proportion. If you see 24 hours, out of 24 hours, 22 hours is on land. And 2 hours is in water. So the amount of association of the other world is far more than what it is supposed to be so that we can become pure. So gradually over a period of time, we should maximize the contact of water. That is the pure Sangha. And once that time invested in pure Sangha increases, there is very little probability that we could get affected by the outside world. So that proportion we have to keep on changing as per the need or period of time. And it's only a matter of time that we can see ourselves growing at a very fast pace.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Oh, I think there's one more raised hand, Prabhu. Dhanashree Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. In the last part of your lecture, you just talked about how we should find out what our nature is, right? Am I correct?
Nature.
Yeah. You talked, that was one of your last sentences, as to find out.
Vritti. Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah, correct.
Kya vritti kade tumi valtai.
Borobar.
So sometimes it happens that it may not be a material attachment. But at the same time, it could be something that you go back in your past. It could be anxiety, it could be hurt, it could be anger, it could be jealousy. And at the same time, you are a continuous a person who is chanting all the time. Manje tumcha antarmanat sudha chanting chalu asta. You are chanting. But at the same time, you don't know how to stop that anxiety or whatever it is, and you are at that particular moment, you are not able to tap that nature which you are going to. So how do you do that?
Okay. There are two things. Okay. Prabhupada also speaks about this in seventh canto. There is something we all in this modern day and time we keep on hearing. There is something called as conscious mind and there is something called as subconscious mind.
Yeah.
Now, conscious mind and subconscious mind, they are functioning in very different patterns. Both of them have one thing in common, but that common thing is they learn by repetition. Okay. And externally seeming, you may think that I'm able to control my anxiety, but that happens just on a superficial level, which we call as conscious mind. But if the pattern is already set on the subconscious level, it becomes very difficult because now it has gone deep. Okay. So superficially, you may try something which will help you deal with the anxiety. But till the time the conscious and subconscious, they come on the same level, you will not be able to have a proper solution. Because what happens, the subconscious mind, it just needs an event to trigger and the entire cycle will complete. Both anxiety ka pura cycle complete karke aapko rokega. Just like if you are walking on the street and you are absolutely unaware of the things around you, are in your own world, and all of a sudden if a dog barks, before you go in the alarm state, the entire system is already on the alarm state. Before you take the charge, the system has already given alarm. That is the subconscious mind. So subconscious mind is exclusively designed for our protection purpose. Okay. Until conscious and subconscious, they come on par, the anxiety will never subside. The hurt will never subside. The stress that I have taken or the deep connection that I have been having with something, some event, some place, some time will not go. So how do you handle this? Now, one point that is very clear is the subconscious mind will always give you what will keep you happy and safe. Okay, just like if a devotee is lazing around. Okay, so if he is lazing around and if that is the set pattern of the subconscious mind, the subconscious mind will always design your things in such a way so that you will take that easy path out, and that may even come up to dropping spiritual life because you are accustomed to an easygoing life and spiritual life seems tough for me. So every time and again, the subconscious mind will give you a response that this is not a safe place. This is not a safe place because we have trained him in what? I want an easygoing life. Okay, so it will always give you easy going out base for that. Now, how do you set all these things in place? Just like if you have, I don't know if you have read Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's personal diary, his biography. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj always, every day, would write letters to Srila Prabhupada. By that time, Srila Prabhupada had already gone back to the spiritual world. Now, most of the times we feel that these are modern techniques. No, these are not modern techniques. If there are n number of letters where Prabhupada is saying, write something, write daily. Now, what is this writing all about? Writing is all about a way to give a subconscious mind path so that I can release all those emotions. And that is why for a devotee, the easiest way to have the next day smooth and happy is make the night as beautiful as possible. If you make your night as beautiful as possible, fill it with beautiful events, fill it with beautiful music, bhajan, association of devotees, that same thing your subconscious will carry to the next. It will multiply. If you fight with somebody and go to sleep, you will sleep. But next day, the subconscious makes it sure that it will multiply that event and give it to you in return. That is why in Vedic times, evening time was exclusively meant for temple time. So in temples, there would be drama, there would be bhajan, there would be kirtan, there would be lectures. Why? The subconscious is getting programmed that my entire night has to be in thinking about Krishna or Ram or whatever. And that is why for them, even if they were ordinary householders, it was easy for them. Just like we took the example of Yudhishthir Maharaj. When Yudhishthir Maharaj heard, when Bhima heard, when Draupadi heard, it became easy for them to leave that painful situation and move on with their life. So if we want to handle, we have to make sure repetition of what things is going on, catch that first. And second is, make your night as beautiful as possible.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Okay, looks like we don't have any other question. So can we stop? Nothing.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Dandavat Pranam. Thank you for this wonderful class and for answering so many questions. Let's offer our obeisances to Prabhuji and all the assembled Vaishnavas. Vancha Kalpata.
Yes, I can see Lilita Mataji.
Radhe, Radhe.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Wonderful class.
Thank you, Prabhuji.